Next up, Jim Black from the Partnership for Sustainability in Delaware and Kevin Plug from the Sierra Club.
Okay.
Mr. Black.
Thank you. Thank you for having this hearing today. I'm feeling a little like, in the words of Yogi Berra, deja vu all over again. I can remember being in a very similar hearing. I think it was on exactly the same topic back in 2003 in a hotel just a little north of here. I don't know if any of you were involved in that hearing. And at that hearing, I remember a couple of points that were made. The New Jersey DEP stated that the cost savings they had from their rule in New Jersey that they had implemented a couple of years earlier than that had already saved the state in just worker productivity, because their workers were healthier, because the emissions from the power plants were reduced, an amount of money greater than the entire cost of doing the upgrades for all of their power, coal-burning power plants. And then there was also a speaker from the AG's office in New York, Elliot Spitzer's group, that they considered the power industry with the coal-burning power plants was getting a $50 billion subsidy, and there's been some reports done since then that showed that there was at least a $50 billion cost to the country in just health-related health effects from coal-burning power plants. We've been working down in Delaware with the state PSC on a life cycle analysis of all the energy generation that the state is procuring and doing a full life cycle analysis of that. And they've determined just for the little state of Delaware that the cost savings of going to cleaner generation is going to save that state between $1.5 billion and $5 billion over the 10 years of the integrated resource plan. So there are significant savings. This doesn't have to be a cost. There are significant savings from making these changes, and we're very much in support of the rulemaking process that you're doing now. We're just encouraging it to be done and moving as quickly as possible. You had a question about international mercury emissions. It's true that the U.S.'s mercury emissions, as significant as they are going to be overwhelmed by China and India, and then you've got all the natural sources like forest fires and volcanoes. But what's affecting us primarily here in Pennsylvania and in other East Coast states is the mercury from our power plants. Those cause hot spots directly downwind of all these power plants. So, yeah, the Indians and the Chinese are going to overwhelm anything that we're doing, but that's distributed broadly, and what's going to cause the health effects here and what does cause the health effects here is specifically from our coal-burning power plants. So anything we can do to clean those up is going to help our health effects here. And we had a gentleman here sitting in this chair just about an hour ago from Chester. Some of the effects of these toxic substances cause violence. You know, that's a reaction to elevated levels of these toxins in our systems. It's perhaps no coincidence that a city that's as contaminated as Chester has such a high rate of violence. And I would venture a guess that the most violent neighborhoods in Philadelphia or Wilmington are also areas where there's high levels of these toxins in the environment. And then This week in the news, there were a couple of stories that were interesting. The Heart Association came out with a recommendation that we should eat at least two servings of fish every week. And then I was reading an article in the, I'm a member of the Academy of Natural Sciences, and there was an article in their membership magazine this month with a study of fish oil supplements that are sold over the counter having elevated levels of PCBs and mercury in them, because, of course, they're coming from the fish, too. So on the one hand, we're recommending that we eat more fish, which is healthy, but at the same time, there's these toxins in the fish, and those toxins, a lot of them are coming from our coal-burning power plants and not handling those toxics efficiently. So I want to close just stating that we are very much in support of what you're doing here, and we just hope that it can be implemented efficiently and in a timely manner. So thank you very much.
Thank you. Yes.
Hello, my name is Kevin Flug, and I'm here today to speak in favor of the proposed mercury rule. I live in Newark, New Jersey, and I'm a member of the Sierra Club. As you know, the proposed rule could prevent 17,000 premature deaths each year, as well as 11,000 heart attacks annually. Furthermore, 11,000 cases of acute bronchitis would be prevented, and perhaps most stunningly, 120,000 children would not be diagnosed with asthma each year. The value of preventing these deaths and this unnecessary suffering cannot be measured in economic terms. If adopted, the proposed mercury rule would be a major achievement in the history of environmental protection in this country. Coal plants are responsible for 99% of the mercury emissions in the United States. As you know, and as many people have testified here today, mercury is a highly toxic substance and can cause extremely detrimental effects to both physical and mental health. Even very small exposure to mercury has been shown to cause tremors, impaired cognitive skills, and sleep disturbances. The mental health effects of mercury exposure are considerably worse in children, and mercury exposure at an early age can have severe negative effects on a child's ability to learn and develop healthy critical thinking and decision-making skills. The proposed mercury rule, however, is not just about mercury. It is also about reducing the amount of energy produced from coal. About 60% of the coal plants in this country already have pollution control technology installed that satisfies the requirements of the proposed rule. Of the remaining 40% of the coal power plants, it will be economically feasible for some of them to install pollution controls that will capture the mercury emissions as required by the rule. But some coal plants will undoubtedly close. As the agency charged with protecting the environment, I ask that you not be reluctant in adopting a rule that will result in coal plants closing. I am here today to tell you what you already know. The United States must lead the world in ending the use of fossil fuels. If we continue to burn coal, the Earth may one day no longer be able to support and sustain human life. In the meantime, we are increasingly seeing the effects of a rising climate. Severe storms, droughts, and once-in-a-hundred-year weather events are becoming commonplace and increasing frequently. To the extent the proposed mercury rule will lead to the closing of coal plants and the reduced use of coal, I ask that you not give in to claims from industry that this rule will be bad for the economy. As the fossil fuel age comes to its inevitable end, hopefully during our lifetimes, the nation's economy will benefit immensely as we are forced by necessity to innovate and invent clean and renewable sources of energy. In the short term, this transformation may be disruptive, but the long-term consequences of doing nothing will be far more painful and possibly catastrophic. To conclude, I applaud the EPA for proposing this rule to reduce mercury pollution. I look forward to seeing it enacted. Thank you for the opportunity to comment.
Thanks to both of you. Are there questions? All right. Thanks, gentlemen. We next have another member from the public, Mervyn Klein, and Alicia McDevitt, a fellow regulator from the Massachusetts Department of Environmental Protection. Welcome, Mr. Klein.
Thank you. My name is, as you mentioned, is Mervyn Klein. I'd like to thank the EPA for the opportunity to be here to testify in favor of reducing pollutants entering the air by establishing national emission standards to deal with the problem.
Let me ask you to move the mic a little bit closer, please, sir. Thank you.
Now, I will tell you what it means to me and the majority of the people who are not here in this room today, especially the children. We depend on the EPA. We depend on the federal, state, and local governments to pass laws and to enforce those laws to protect the air we breathe. It doesn't matter if we are a Democrat, a Republican, or an independent, we all breathe the same air. If we live in California or New York or somewhere in between, we all breathe the same air. If you're a rich person or a poor person, we all breathe the same air. Until about 3 years ago, I was unaware of a number of facts. There were no national limits on the amount of mercury and other toxic air pollutants that were allowed to be released from power plant smokestacks. Although Congress passed amendments to improve the Clean Air Act 20 years ago, coal-fired power plants were exempt from these regulations. Over 300,000 tons of 84 pollutants have been in these power plant emissions. Mercury is present in these hazardous emissions. Mercury has been detected in only 3% of women in 1996, but is now being detected in 30% of the women as of 2006. Children are much more at risk from these emissions than adults. Children suffer the greatest physical and mental risks from mercury and other pollutants while they are fetuses in their mother's body. Hundreds of thousands of illnesses and up to 300,000 premature deaths would not have occurred during the past 20 years if emissions had been reduced 20 years ago when the amendments to the Clean Air Act were passed. It is cheaper to reduce hazardous emissions than to pay the cost of health care for people sickened by these emissions. The mercury pollution from these emissions gets into our food supply and contaminates one of America's favorite food, canned tuna. These emissions contain toxic and carcinogenic pollutants. I was one of the lucky ones, ignorant of the problems, and still a survivor of a polluted environment in a nation in which the air is still being contaminated. Where was I until 3 years ago? I was working full-time teaching, 18 years teaching medical school biochemistry, 12 years teaching high school biology, physical science, and environmental science. Bundled with my years of heavy teaching were the responsibilities of fatherhood and other family obligations. This left no time for other activities. Nevertheless, I expect, and I still expect, the Environmental Protection Agency to protect me and my family against environmental hazards. Everyone should expect this. What changed 3 years ago? I retired. This freed up time for me to volunteer with the Clean Air Council, and over the several years, I became their mercury pollution specialist. I've learned how dangerous our environment has become. Childhood cancers are becoming more prevalent and being attributed to environmental pollutants. Other species are affected. Over 4,000 fishing advisories have been issued for all 50 states, and 80% of them were issued at least in part because of mercury pollution. Birds high in the mountains, far away from any recognized mercury sources, contain mercury. Some land creatures now contain mercury. The explanation focuses on environmental pollution. I'm fortunate that I have been able to retire. Many people work two jobs or have lost their jobs and their homes. Many people are caretakers or are themselves in need of care. Some are mentally handicapped, some are physically handicapped. There are enough personal problems to keep people occupied 24/7. People who work for EPA work full-time on the environmental problems. The rest of us work full-time at whatever our jobs demand. We all depend upon a system of laws to protect us against these problems while we struggle to solve all the rest of our problems until the environmental problems and the personal problems become the same. Because this generation is responsible for the health of the next generation, I would like to conclude by repeating what I said initially. I'm a concerned citizen who is strongly in favor of and supports the EPA in establishing and enforcing national standards to reduce emissions from these power plants. Thank you very much for giving me time to talk to you.
Thank you.
Good afternoon. My name is Alicia McDevitt, and I am the Deputy Commissioner for the Massachusetts Department of Environmental Protection. On behalf of MassDEP and the Commonwealth of Massachusetts, I'm pleased to be here today to provide testimony in support of EPA's proposed mercury and air toxics rule. To start, I'd like to congratulate EPA for completing and releasing these draft standards, which are a vast improvement over the vacated Clean Air Mercury Rule, or CAMR. On February 8, 2008, the U.S. Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia Circuit vacated CAMR in response to suits by a number of petitioners, including Massachusetts, who were concerned that mercury emissions tradings allowed under CAMR would create, exacerbate, or perpetuate existing mercury hotspots. The court concurred with the petitioners that claims that CAMR inappropriately used a trading approach under Section 111 of the Clean Air Act rather than requiring emissions to be controlled using maximum achievable control technology, or MACT, under Section 112. EPA's recently proposed regulations now appropriately address power plant emissions under Section 112 of the Clean Air Act by requiring MACT. This approach is consistent with the requirements of the Clean Air Act and will achieve more substantial and faster reductions in emissions of mercury and other hazardous air pollutants than under CAMR. These reductions are necessary to protect the environment and human health, particularly children, from acid gases, dioxins, and metals, including in particular mercury. Emissions of hazardous air pollutants from power plants are of great concern to Massachusetts. Due to prevailing weather patterns and winds that carry pollutants into our region, out-of-state power plants are a significant source of air pollution, including mercury deposition in Massachusetts and across the Northeast. Mercury is of great concern because it is a potent neurotoxin, particularly to the developing brains of fetuses and young children. Even small amounts of mercury are harmful. A 2-pound fish containing less than 1/100,000th of an ounce of mercury is unsafe to eat. Unfortunately, extensive scientific research demonstrates widespread mercury pollution in Massachusetts and across New England, largely attributable to air deposition of mercury. All New England states have fish consumption advisories in effect because of elevated levels of mercury. These advisories cover thousands of lakes, ponds, and reservoirs, and tens of thousands of river miles. Because of widespread pollution, mercury's potent toxicity, and its ability to bioaccumulate in the food chain, tens of thousands of children in the Northeast are exposed to unacceptable levels of mercury each year, primarily due to in utero exposures attributable to their mother's consumption of contaminated fish. As required under the U.S. Clean Water Act, Massachusetts, together with the other New England states and New York, completed an assessment of the maximum amount of mercury pollution that freshwater bodies can tolerate and still have fish that are safe to eat. This New England Regional Total Maximum Daily Load, or TMDL, for mercury concluded that anthropogenic mercury pollution will ultimately need to be reduced by more than 87% to allow for the safe consumption of fish from many lakes and ponds in our region. In order to achieve reductions of this magnitude, the maximum level of control of mercury emissions will need to be achieved from all significant sources, particularly coal-fired power plants, which constitute the largest unregulated national source of mercury emissions. MassDEP has been working on mercury pollution since the 1990s, leading national and international efforts to reduce mercury pollution. To address our sources of mercury pollution, Massachusetts is implementing a statewide multimedia mercury strategy as part of a regional effort through the New England Governor's and Eastern Canadian Premier's Mercury Action Plan. Under these initiatives, Massachusetts and regional sources of mercury pollution from all sources, including coal-fired electric generating units, have been dramatically reduced. For example, under Phase 1 of our power plant regulations, which took effect on January 1st of 2008, each Massachusetts coal-fired facility was required to capture at least 85% of the mercury in coal burned or emit no more than 0.0075 pounds of mercury per net gigawatt hour of electricity generated. In Phase 2, which takes effect on October 1, 2012, each facility must capture at least 95% of the mercury in the facility's coal or emit no more than 0.0025 pounds of mercury per net gigawatt hour of electricity generated. Other states have also adopted more stringent mercury limits than EPA is proposing. Although Massachusetts' mercury emission limits for existing coal-fired power plants are considerably more stringent than those now proposed by EPA, Massachusetts facilities have been able to install control equipment with no impact on reliability of the electric power grid and have demonstrated consistent compliance with the limits. Therefore, based on state experience, EPA's proposed mercury limits are achievable by power plants around the country and perhaps should even be tightened. In addition to leading to faster mercury reductions, EPA's new rule will level the playing field. Massachusetts and several other states have dramatically reduced mercury and other harmful emissions from local power plants, and we pay amongst the highest electricity rates in the country, in part because of these types of rules. The fact that we have done this in the absence of federal regulation of mercury not only puts us at a competitive disadvantage, but also means that we do not enjoy the full benefit of these pollution reductions because we are downwind of states that have not imposed similar controls. The EPA's new rules go a long way to addressing this iniquity. Encouragingly, ongoing monitoring efforts in Massachusetts and other states indicate that mercury levels in fish and other biota have fallen as we have addressed our region's sources of mercury pollution. However, fish mercury levels from most water bodies still remain too high. Due to air transport and deposition, emissions from out-of-state out-of-region sources, in particular of coal-fired power plants, are now the largest contributors to our mercury pollution problem and must be reduced to protect our environment, the health of our children, and to meet the objectives of the Clean Air and Clean Water Acts. Reducing power plant emissions will also improve environmental quality and public health, not only in my state and region, but also in all areas downwind of these facilities. In conclusion, Massachusetts believes that the proposed regulations are a considerable improvement over CAMR, and we urge EPA to move expeditiously with finalizing and implementing the rules. EPA's inclusion of multiple hazardous air pollutants in the proposed rule is also appropriate, as it will ultimately be more cost-effective for power plants to address toxic emissions together rather than piecemeal. Finally, we note that Massachusetts and several other states have already adopted more stringent regulations to limit mercury emissions from coal-fired power plants. EPA must ensure that the states continue to have the flexibility to implement more aggressive standards and should urge power plants to, where possible, reduce mercury emissions beyond the EPA proposed limits. Thank you for the opportunity to speak. We do plan to submit more detailed comments to EPA by the close of the comment deadline and to expand upon the remarks I've made here. In summary, we urge EPA to finalize the regulation on schedule so that the work of reducing power plant emissions can begin and reductions are achieved in 2014. We will all breathe easier when that occurs. Thank you.
Thank you. Let me ask you one question, because it strikes me that your decision, Massachusetts' decision to proceed with regulations of mercury from coal-fired power plants, even before we had put in place requirements at the national level, is analogous to the situation we're facing, where we're deciding whether to proceed with our national standards while internationally the world is still developing control requirements. Can you say something about how you dealt with that and why you decided to proceed even though the national standards were still under development?
Well, as I mentioned, Massachusetts has participated, along with the other Northeast states and the Eastern Canadian premiers, in a regional mercury action plan. So it wasn't a matter of our state proceeding entirely on our own. And we did look to have a regional solution because all of the states in the Northeast and the Eastern Canadian provinces were facing similar problems. I think that it's important in thinking about taking these steps in advance to note, as I touched upon, that we'll have more details about this in our written comments, but that shortly after those standards have been imposed in the Northeast and Eastern Canadian provinces, we have good data showing that as soon as 2 years after the requirements went in place, that mercury levels in fish have started to decrease by measurable amounts. And so there is solid evidence that that moving ahead can be done in a cost, you know, effective and feasible manner without impacts to reliability.
Thank you, and thanks to both of you. I think that we have four more people before lunch, and then I'll make a couple of comments to wrap up the morning session. First, we have Catherine Bowes from the National Wildlife Federation and Margaret Motherall from the Union of Concerned Scientists.
Okay, I'm Margaret Motherall. I'm not really from the Union of Concerned Scientists. I'm a citizen.
Okay, thank you.
And my head is on mercury, so my notes are kind of discombobulated. I was exposed in 2006 really rapidly in the Mount Airy neighborhood of Philadelphia when they dug up a contaminated brownfield next to my house. My talk is kind of two-part. One, my symptoms. I was like laying on the floor for like 3 months, really weak, couldn't eat, lost 30 pounds. Until I finally ended up in the hospital because I couldn't breathe and had to leave my house. Since then, I'm still coughing. One cat died of cancer. The other cat, I have to wake up every morning listening to her lung distress. I can't dance anymore because my feet are numb. So this just gives you an idea of the impact on it's totally changed my life. One day I went to lay down and I was tired, and this idea came to mind about these issues. And I want to thank the EPA for working on this. A couple of years ago, I went to an EPA conference, and the topic was enlisting the help of citizens in your work and recognizing them as a good resource. And the idea I came up with in that NAP is like related to the fact that these days we take it for granted that our food and our products have the ingredients listed on them. And that was a big struggle. It was a big political struggle to get that done. And so my idea was like, we have a right to know what's in our oil, our air and our soil and our water. And I wrote up basically a Bill of Rights that gives every citizen the right to find and ways to find this out. Because as hard as the government works, there's a real lack of response, and there's a real disconnect between a citizen in trouble that needs their help and a real response on the part of the government. And the equipment and laboratory things that we need these days to ascertain what's in our air, water, and soil is not that complicated. There's like machines, there's testing and everything, and people can learn this. And it would seem to me that every person has the right to obtain rapid and transparent information regarding the health and chemical composition of their local air, water, and soil. And then they should not be stopped. It should be a right, just like the right to speech. And that, like we have libraries, these facilities or, you know, lending tool sheds, you know, and some instruction, like if you're worried about your well or you're worried about your soil and you want it tested, you can go do that and you don't have to call the EPA. I've been connecting with a lot of people who are sick from mercury and other chemicals. And this one woman last night, she for the last few months, she's been complaining about it being sick. And then yesterday, she found out that the well on her landlord's land, there's a truck with diesel or something coming out of it. And essentially, there's benzene in the water. And so she's been getting sick with this. But the EPA came out, and they said, well, it's under the limits, you know. But she's still sick. So the limits are also something to look at. But all in all, I really feel that engaging the public in a more active way and for it to be our automatic right and not have to go through a court or wait 10 years to find out like what you were exposed to is essential, just like those labels that we have on our food in our grocery stores. So I just ask for your continued cooperation and interest in working with just regular people who deal with this every day and know something about it.
Okay.
And thank you.
Thank you for being willing to come here and relate your experience to us. Next, we have Catherine Bowes from the National Wildlife Federation.
Yes. Hi. Thank you. Again, Bose, the National Wildlife Federation. On behalf of our 4 million members and supporters nationwide, I thank you for the opportunity to comment on the proposed mercury and air toxics rule. For over a decade, National Wildlife Federation has pushed for strong regulations to limit mercury pollution from all sources, given the grave threat that mercury contamination poses to both people and wildlife. After years of unnecessary and unacceptable delays, we applaud the Environmental Protection Agency for finally moving forward to require coal-fired power plants, the nation's largest source of toxic mercury pollution, to cut their emissions. We strongly support EPA's proposal under discussion today. For me and many others in this room today, it does feel like a bit of deja vu. 7 years ago, EPA collected public comments here in Philadelphia on a very different mercury rule proposed by the Bush administration. At that hearing, I voiced NWF's strong opposition to their flawed proposal and called on EPA to go back to the drawing board and draft a standard that followed the stringent hazardous air pollution requirements of the Clean Air Act. After years of legal challenges, I'm both personally and professionally relieved to see EPA's strong proposal today. Sadly, readily available technology to control mercury pollution has sat on the shelf collecting dust all these years, while massive amounts of preventable toxic pollution has continued unabated. Decades of delay and inaction to address toxic pollution have resulted in thousands of premature deaths, heart attacks, birth defects, and incidences of diseases like childhood asthma, among others. Additionally, while several states have stepped up and set strong toxic pollution limits for power plants within their borders, the lack of a national standard has led to severe contamination of our lakes, rivers, and forests from both acid rain and mercury pollution. Today, every state in the country has some form of mercury advisory warning people to limit or avoid eating certain species of fish because of the dangers of mercury exposure. As a federation founded by hunting and fishing organizations, NWF is particularly concerned about the threat this poses to those of us who fish and to our outdoor heritage. Mercury, even in small amounts, is a potent neurotoxin, especially dangerous in the early stages of development for both people and wildlife. And while we have the benefit of fish consumption advisories to help limit our mercury intake, wildlife do not have the luxury of choosing a food source that has lower mercury levels and are not able to avoid the dangers lurking in their contaminated habitats. And it's not just fish. Historically, scientists believe that mercury only threatens species that live and feed in aquatic habitats. However, recent research is showing that mercury is accumulating at dangerous levels in terrestrial species as well. No longer is the threat of mercury exposure limited to only fish-eating wildlife, such as loons and eagles. Scientists now know that mercury is building up in insect-eating species, such as forest songbirds, and there is truly no link in the food chain untouched by mercury. As a result, mercury pollution is a far greater threat to biodiversity than we've previously thought. There's a wide range of wildlife species beyond fish that accumulate mercury, including birds, mammals, reptiles, amphibians, invertebrates, and marine wildlife. There are many health impacts associated with high mercury levels in these species. The primary consequences are increased vulnerability due to reproductive and neurological problems, which lead to behavioral abnormalities, and immune system deficiencies. For example, fish with high mercury levels have difficulty schooling and decreased spawning success. Birds lay fewer eggs and have trouble caring for their chicks. Mammals have impaired motor skills that affect their ability to hunt and find food. All these effects combine to create a severe threat to wildlife survival. But there is good news. Research shows that once sources of mercury pollution are cleaned up, mercury levels in nearby waters go down in a matter of years, not decades. Coal-fired power plants play a major role in contaminating local fish and wildlife, and once this new rule goes into effect, that will change. EPA must move forward and finalize a strong mercury and air toxics rule without delay, in order to protect public health and our treasured wildlife from toxic pollution. It is time for the owners and operators of these facilities to be finally held responsible and accountable for their preventable toxic emissions. Our children, wildlife, and future generations should no longer be sacrificed to satisfy polluters' special interest. Thank you, and we'll be providing more detailed comments to the docket before the deadline. Thanks.
Thanks to both of you. Our last panel for the morning is Rabbi Kevin Kleinman and Jamin Bogey.
Good afternoon. My name is Rabbi Kevin Kleinman. I'm the assistant rabbi at Reform Congregation Knesset Israel in Elkins Park, Pennsylvania. I'm also a fellow with Grain Faith, a religious organization dedicated to using our religious values to protect environmental health and advocate toward a more sustainable future for ourselves and our communities. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today in support of the proposed rule change to reduce mercury and other toxic air pollution from coal and oil-fired power plants under Section 112 of the Clean Air Act. When put into place, this rule will benefit our health, the environment, and create American jobs. In Jewish texts and traditions, we are instructed that while God created the earth, It is the responsibility of man and woman to care for the creation. The mandate for environmental stewardship is at the core of the Reformed Jewish movements and Green Faith's work to change both policy and practices that affect our environment and all the species, including humans, which inhabit and rely on our natural world. Additionally, the Jewish tradition insists that saving a life takes precedence over all other concerns, be they religious or economic. These values lead directly to my faith-based support for creating mercury and air toxic standards for coal and oil-fired power plants. My wife and I had a baby 9 months ago. My son and my wife are the most important things in the world to me right now. I sit before you today because I find it unconscionable, from both the perspective of a new dad and a leader in the faith community, that there are currently no controls in air pollution from coal and oil-fired power plants when it is widely known that these pollutants cause irreparable harm to fetuses, newborns, and growing children, the very future of our country. By updating safeguards under the Clean Air Act to reduce mercury, acid gases, and other life-threatening pollution in our air, I believe the EPA is acting to protect our health and our families from the illnesses and premature deaths linked to these pollutants. Uncontrolled releases of toxic air pollutants like mercury from power plants damage children's developing brains, reduces their IQ and their ability to learn. They also lead to a range of dangerous health problems in adults. These standards will save lives. Each year, up to 17,000 premature deaths, 11,000 heart attacks, 120,000 asthma attacks, 12,000 hospital and emergency room visits, and 4,500 cases of chronic bronchitis will be prevented. Think not only about the emotional costs saved, but actual costs for families and hospitals to treat these patients. The value of the air quality improvements totals $59 to $140 billion each year. For every dollar spent to reduce this pollution, Americans will get $5 to $13 in health benefits. This rule will also lead to the creation of new American jobs. Money spent on pollution control at power plants creates high-quality American jobs and manufacturing steel, cement, and other materials needed to build pollution control equipment, and creating and assembling pollution control equipment and installing the equipment at power plants and operating and maintaining the equipment once it is installed. The EPA has estimated the proposed rule will create 31,000 short-term construction jobs and 9,000 long-term utility jobs. We all know how important job creation is right now to the well-being of our nation. Lastly, this rule will level the playing field for cleaner energy sources. These updated and long overdue Clean Air Act standards will provide regulatory certainty, opening up the opportunities for investment in cleaner energy. It has been shown that power plants are able to install the technology to reduce pollution within the proposed time frame. The technology already exists, and certain plants have voluntarily installed the necessary scrubbers. Installing these widely available controls will help modernize the aging fleet of uncontrolled power plants, significantly reducing the toxins put into the air each year. In time, I hope that we as a nation reduce the amount of electricity we use and seek to supplement alternative sources to generate this energy with the traditional coal and oil-fired plants. This will be the only way to truly lessen the harm to our children and our planet. In closing, I thank you again for the opportunity to testify today in support of the proposed rule change of the Clean Air Act. This rule will save lives. This rule will save money. This rule will create jobs. As a religious leader, part of the religious environmental movement, I urge you to take to heart the teachings of my faith tradition, as well as the Christian and Islamic traditions that value human life, and take seriously our obligation to care for the earth.
Thank you. Mr. Bogie.
Good afternoon, and thank you for holding this hearing today and for getting my name right. Recent studies showed that some judges are harsher to suspects they see right before lunch, so please be kind. I work for Group Against Smog and Pollution, also known as GASP, a nonprofit fighting for clean air in southwestern Pennsylvania. We've been doing so for 42 years now. We're older than the National Ambient Air Quality Standards by a few months, standards for which our region is in non-attainment for ozone and PM2.5. 42 years is a long time. Some of our members and board members have been with us since the beginning. We have two nuclear physicists on our board, one in his 80s, the other in his 90s, with GASP from the start, and they're still pushing us. They're a little intimidating, actually. Can we get a tour of X facility? Can we get data on Y? Still pushing us, keeping us busy, and we are busy. We can and do review permits for major sources of pollutants in our region, but we can't create a legal definition of a major source. We look to you for that definition. We can and do review and collect and count notices of violation, but we look to you to say what a violation is. We can and do train citizens to use their eyes in EPA Method 9 to observe and report on smokestack opacity, but we look to you to set sound observation methods and proper opacity standards. Today we look to you again to adopt strong regulations which will greatly reduce emissions of toxic heavy metals and acid gases. Some of our members have been waiting 42 years just for the chance to say, yes, please reduce these emissions. It doesn't matter how we got here. Consent decree, the court vacating the last attempt at this, shifting political pressures, none of it matters. What does matter is we, you, have the opportunity to move this debate forward. And is there really a debate about a rule that would prevent 7,000 to 17,000 premature deaths? About a rule that would stop 91% of mercury from coal burning from entering the air? That provides benefits many times greater than costs? I guess there still is a debate. So let me simply state GASP's position. We support strong regulations that will take particulate matter, acid gases, and heavy metals out of our air. I'm tired of visiting high schools, seeing the kids full of energy, excitement, only to watch their jaws drop as I talk to them about cancer, stroke, arrhythmia, telling them that the city they live in might be giving them asthma. I'm tired of mile after mile after mile of our waterways containing fish that have mercury levels high enough to make our fishermen unable to eat their catch. Imagine how tired the people are who have been doing this with us for 42 years, especially all the people living in the affected communities. I don't want to be back before you 42 years from now. So please enact strong regulations now while we have the chance. I'd like to conclude with a passage from The Good Society by John Kenneth Galbraith. The Good Society does not deny the existence of the conflict between basic economic motivation and contemporary and long-run environmental effects. It seeks to resolve the conflict in a rational way. There is no escape from the role of government. It is for the larger community interest and its future protection that government and governmental regulation exist. Thank you.
Thanks to both of you for being willing to stay late to testify. And let me just very briefly wrap up the morning session by saying, and I'm sure I speak for the full panel, how impressed we've been by the caliber of testimony this morning. It was very clear that everyone, without exception, who testified, took a good deal of time to prepare their statement. And there were a lot of views expressed that were backed up by statistics and science and facts. And that's enormously helpful to us as we try to put together the final version of this rule. So thanks to all of you. I want to make one other comment, which is on the diversity of people who testified. We've heard from people from many different walks of life and many different perspectives, people from the public, people from the faith-based community, people from the business community, people from science and medical professions, and all of that is also very useful to us. So thanks, and look forward to seeing some of you back this afternoon and to another round of testimony. Thank you.